Welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 91.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I'm your host, Don Cardenas, and today I am joined by returning guests, Brent Fisher and Michelle Abinader. Brent, Michelle, thank you again for coming on again.
Yeah, happy to be here. Again.
So, anyone who's listening to this will know, based on the title and everything, this will be another one of our shuffle interviews where we have you answer five random questions randomly selected from a field of 150. So, but before we get to that, you two have a very awesome Kickstarter that you are getting ready to launch, and we have a ton of cool things I know that are associated with that we're going to talk about. But even before that, I need to ask you a question. Comics, coffee, or metal? Tell me your favorite thing from one of those.
Let's do comics, and we'll talk. I think you mentioned favorite cover.
Yeah, whatever you want to do.
I'm a subscriber to Kelly Thompson's Substack, and she had a really great article recently where she invited everybody to talk about their favorite comic covers and art, and going back as far or as soon as you'd like. And it turns out a little bit sooner rather than later. My favorite cover, hands down, is Red Sonja, number 3 from 2020. I believe it was Tedesco's cover. And she has like these giant horn antlers, and she's majestic, queenly, and all these kind of people like fawning over her. And it's drawn in such a way that it gives a lot of agency to the character that I want. Whenever they actually draw her where it's not just a pinup, mm-hmm. I think it's just super badass. And I would highly recommend anyone go after it. I actually loved it so much I chased down the Virgin variant, which is pretty much impossible to get with a Dynamite release after a certain point. So it's really phenomenal.
Awesome. Michelle?
Well, now I want to talk about my favorite comics covers.
Do it.
I was really hoping that Brent would talk about pumpkin spice lattes so that I could make fun of them about it. But here we are, and we're going to talk about favorite comics covers. I would say, I think Submerged number 2 by Jem Bartel would be my favorite comics cover. Really kind of...
Ooh, good pick.
You know, really creepy. The lady's, poking her head out of the water. It's, blood, tears. Really beautiful cover. And obviously, I love, all of Jen Bartel's covers. They're always so beautiful. So, I love the colors that she uses. And Submerged itself is such a great book. Whenever I think of covers I really love, I think of that one. And Jen Bartel also did the only Captain Marvel cover that I like. Sorry, Brent, I'm trying. sorry, trigger word Carol, but
I appreciate that so much.
But it's a really beautiful cover, the mirror image of her over the water. It's just a really beautiful cover. So I have a really huge appreciation for Jen Bartel's covers and pumpkin flavored coffee.
It is technically the Life of Captain Marvel cover.
That's how much I care, Brent, honestly. Literally trying so hard, okay?
So
I'm just doing this for you.
So branching off that a little bit, do you two prefer when a comic book cover represents the insides of the book, or would you prefer just a striking image that's at least tangentially associated with the story?
Two extremes. It either needs to absolutely indicate what you're getting or not do so whatsoever. I don't accept the middle ground. It needs to be this is literally what's happening, or has nothing to do with it at all.
I kind of have to agree. I think people that don't know anything say you can't judge a book by its cover, but I honestly have picked up comics because I thought that the cover image was beautiful. I had no idea what was happening inside of the book. So I think it can kind of go both ways. I think you want to grab potential readers, especially these days with single issues at comic shops, things are rough. You want it to grab attention because it could be the difference between your book selling well at a shop and your book not selling well at a shop. So I think striking images are super in these days.
Well, yeah, and it runs the gambit from, like, I would say there's artists that excel at both, so it gives more artists who are often, because there's cover artists, that's all they do, but yeah. By choice, circumstance, whatever, you know. But like Mark Brooks, I think he is pretty much the pinnacle of this is what is happening inside, or at least an approximation of it. But he renders it with such beautiful acumen, it's like a Rockwell painting. And then you get some more of the more ephemeral artists that kind of encapsulate just the generalistic idea of what's transpiring within, kind of like a Stephanie Hans. And I think that's has its own merits too, which is kind of cool.
What Brent is trying to say is there are a lot of covers that are just like hot lady that I want to murder me looking at me on the cover like she wants to murder me, and then I will buy that book.
Correct.
Well, I can agree with your thoughts on the two extremes, that it's kind of like, you know, shit or get off the pot, right?
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, thanks for answering that question. And now let's get to the really good stuff. Let's talk about your upcoming Kickstarter for, well, we've been calling it SWAT Cow, the abbreviation, but if you would do us the honor of giving us the full proper name.
Sure. Yeah, the new Kickstarter launches on September 27th, and it is called Sharp Wit and the Company of Women. It is a comic anthology about, you know, like if we're really bringing it down to the basics, women with weapons, any kind of weapon, doesn't have to be swords, but, you know, like we call it the Sword Girl anthology. So sword girls are in. Again, here we are with me talking about women that I want to murder me. Brent, if you want to, like... be a little more eloquent, please.
I'm just
go
as guilty. I think we actually had a conversation about Sharpwit and the Company of Women. What if we just rammed them both together? Sure, it's perfect. And then and the P.T. Barnum element is Sword Ladies. It's like that meme of the guy with the hair in the air where it says aliens and he's holding his arms up, you know. It's that, but it says Sword Ladies. That's us doing that. And That's the kind of the byline, but it's actually okay. Let me get my soapbox out. My Brent collar popped. Okay.
Here we go. If you need to go get a drink, now's the time
for some coffee. Basically, we wanted to take something that is the embodiment of women with agency, because if you look back in terms of storytelling, which is like the glue that holds us together culturally as a society, and you go all the way back to antiquity, women were in positions of wisdom, authority, power. Well, because of that, we wanted to do a book that kind of brought back that storytelling, that allegory of agency and power, and like the tales of yore, especially during a time contemporaneously where women are being deprived of choice and autonomy. An agency, and what better way to fight with our 5 feet of space as a storytelling group and publisher than to champion stories that bring this back into the lexicon of conversation? And who better to do it than a conglomeration of LGBTQIA+ creators? So challenge the notion of othering again, of society, pushing back against these notions that one gender, any permutation of gender is better than another. And that's kind of where that is in the fanciful side of things. But, you know, women that want to kill us works too.
Right. That's a very Brentified way of saying, I want women to murder me and I want to look at beautiful comic stories about those women who I want to murder me.
And it is gorgeous. This is going to be a phenomenal book.
I honestly pinch myself. I can't even believe that this is a book that I'm making. It's incredible. I'm so excited.
Well, you started dropping some of the teams associated with the book on the Extra Pages Press Twitter, and it's quite a lineup so far of very, very talented people, and it seems like it's just going to be another collection of just absolutely gorgeous-looking art and beautiful, heartfelt stories. Is there a way you're approaching this differently than your previous Kickstarters? Is there like something you've learned from there going into this one that you're kind of taking with you?
I mean, I could get really boring and talk about everything I learned about budgeting and timelines and production and and doing layout and making a print file. Like, I learned a lot of like very nitpicky little things about comic production and comic budgeting. And so obviously I'm taking all of that into this with me to make this a little bit less stressful for myself. But I think, I mean, we learned a lot about creators and different things that they like in a team of people they work with, things that they will lean on editors for, things that make them feel safer in a space. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we're trying to build a community and we learn from everyone that we have involved. Like, we have our Color of Always team and we learned so much from them in terms of, you know, when we were building like our contract, like finding ways to like help the creators feel like they could trust us, because, you know, we really do have like the team at the forefront all the time of our thoughts when we're deciding what choices to make for the books. And I hope that we're building this reputation as, you know, editors and creators who care about their creative teams. Like, we really care about the people in the book and we want to lift them up and make them feel good and make them feel good about working with us. So that's obviously something that's always at the forefront of my mind, is just making sure that our teams feel like we're representing them properly. And I definitely learned a lot about that during production for Color of Always. And, you know, we continue with Color of Always. And as we move into the Swat Cow era, you know, we still, you know, just really creator focused, and we're very, very into making sure that like our gay community members that we're boosting really feel like we care about them. That's important.
Awesome.
I think the big, oh, sorry. Good.
No, go ahead, Brent. You make your point first.
Oh no, I just wanted to echo that. And that is the biggest takeaway. We could argue budget numbers and logistics, and there is a streamlined process that we're going to embrace that will probably be not as obtuse as it was from the first go, because we got really ambitious. But watching our creators grow, watching the first generation of our teams from that inaugural effort get into other anthologies and get into other projects. Some of them are even working for published, you know, big three a little bit too, or they're mm-hmm. about to. And that's very rewarding. And when they look back at us and smile and wave, you know, you can't help but have a little bit of a warmth to knowing that you played some small part in giving them the confidence, because the talent was already there.
No, that's an excellent point. That's got to be like, you know, just as close to like, just, yeah, just seeing like a parent see like, oh, you know, you have the tools and all that, but I kind of help a little bit. And it's good to see you just flourish and go forth and just kick more ass out there. And I'm super glad to be part of that. Or at least like a rung in that ladder of your.
They just didn't share.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I really love like hyping people up, and it's so cool to see people that we've worked with like moving on to like other amazing projects. And I just like love to see it, and it's cool to be like, yeah, I did a book with them once. That's really cool. And I'm really excited for the future of everyone we worked with, because everyone is so talented. I just like can't wait to see what everyone does next. And I'm just like really grateful and really thankful to have gotten the opportunity to work with everyone on Color of Always. And, you know, Swat Cow era is even more mind blowing. It just feels so wild. Like you said, we did drop, by the time this airs, we will have dropped all the team names. So there's some really exciting people in Swat Cow, like obviously myself and Tench, my artist from Color of Always. We're back at it again, really excited. Brent and their artist from Color of Always, Rachel. Brent and Rachel are great together, really excited for their story. This time around, we've got Fellhound doing a story. Who's sort of like the indie comics patron saint of Sword Girls. So yeah.
Ringo nominated Fellhound.
Yeah.
Ringo nominated Fellhound. We've got Justin Richards. You know, Justin mm-hmm. was on the show recently with me, of Finger Guns. With Liana Genghis, which is another incredible team. I can't believe they're in a book with us. You know, it's incredible. We've got Danny Lore with Skylar Patridge. It's going to be really wild.
Oh, wow.
We've got
awesome.
Jadzia Axelrod with Rye Hickman, another, like, it's just so wild to me that these people are going to be in our book because I like love their work so much and have such a great respect for them as creators. It's really kind of surreal for me. I can't speak for Brett, but I'm sure they might echo the sentiment that like, as like a newer creator, a newer voice on the scene in the queer comics community, it's so cool to work with people that I've really admired and respected work that they've done for so long. And now I'm like, I'm going to be like in a book with them. Like, it's definitely like, it's very strange to feel like I'm on the same playing field as these people in this, for this book. Like, cause I just respect and love their work so much and love their voices. And I love their presence in the community. And it's so cool to be a part of something that I'm going to be just so proud of.
And our names are on the front like, of it.
Yeah. Right. I'm just going to be so proud to be a part of this. And it's like, there's like the me that's making it. That's like mean mommy and like yelling at everyone to stay on target and meet your deadlines. And then there's me that's like crying alone on the floor because like she can't believe that she's in this book. So the duality of Michelle.
Well, not to give you both the impossible choice here with this next question, but are there pitches that you received for this book that you know are, once they're all done, they are just going to wreck everybody?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Destruction of your whole self.
I mean, this makes Color of Always child's play, in my opinion. In terms of tier
boy.
We'll see.
It's going to be really powerful. I'm really excited.
Nice. I was going to ask, you know, how many teams are involved with the books? I think today you released six teams.
this is a funny question.
And I think, as of recording, this is, you know, before the rest of the announcements and all that, so I understand that there's still some... decisions to be made, page counts to be figured out.
There's all the decisions are made. There are 19 stories in this book.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
We had a really hard time making the decisions about which stories to keep in because we got so many incredible submissions that it was absolutely like heartbreaking. Like I had to take several days off of like being active on social media to kind of like take a breath after we had to like say no to people for this book because there were so many incredible pitches and so much incredible artwork and talent that it literally like broke my heart to tell people no. And I know that's sort of like, that's part of it. It's part of editing. It's part of curating an anthology, but like there's that human element to having to, I mean, I know people, they expect rejections when you apply for a lot of anthologies, but I just like never want to let people down. I never want to disappoint people. So, I mean, for me personally, it was super hard to like say no. And that's why we have 19 teams because Mommy is like a secret softie.
there was a process. We have an editorial squad of course, Phil Hound and Justin and the two of us in terms of the review process. And there was a form, there was a spreadsheet.
There was.
We made like two or three initial cuts. It was almost like March Madness in a way, how we were trying to deliberate this. And it wasn't because it was hard in the sense of some stories met the standard of what we were trying to do so clearly that we had to make room. It wasn't as if like, oh, I don't know which one to choose. It was more like, well, these three have to be in the book. And then we had to go from there. And that nudged it up forward. So there was a lot of deliberations. And I think we did the best we could with what we were able to work with. And you know what? No regrets. You know, we'll slap the goal on there. We calculated budget. We knew this might happen. But it was hard. But I think the thing that I'm really grateful for is the amount of excitement and grace that was extended to us from those who weren't able to make the cut.
Yeah, everyone was really nice and very kind in reply to, you know, not moving forward. And it was nice, but there wasn't any animosity. And I think people just appreciate what we're trying to do, and they want to support, you know, people in the community, support gay creators, and support like our mission to like boost gay creators. So I think, you know, people that didn't get in are still like excited for what we're trying to do here. So it's really cool.
And from what it sounds like, it certainly wasn't a matter of, oh, these stories or these pitches aren't meeting the quality of what we're trying to do. It's just the overall, like, it lines up with what your message is, what you're trying to do with this book. And so it's not like, oh, it's not good enough. It's just like, it's just not the best fit for this book.
Right.
And that's a much, you know, having had my fair share of whatever, you know, rejections, if you want to call it, that one always goes down a lot smoother than, you know, like, oh, no, no thanks, or you weren't selected or whatever. Just saying like, oh, you know, it's just not what, it doesn't fit exactly what we're trying to do here, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I'm sure that goes a long way as well. And that, you know, is also a, you know, speaks to you for how you're handling these things, and you're, you know, making sure that the creators, even though they're not being selected for this particular project, you still appreciate them, you still are trying to support them, and like you said, they know what you're trying to do. There's no like shading it, there's no like, you know, ulterior motive other than, you know, well, you know, I guess the most ulterior of motives is women you want to murder you.
That's
as deep as your ulterior motives go.
Right. If you really want to get down to it, that's where we are.
Yeah.
And true anthology fashion, though, the stories will run the gambit from the it's not just, you'll see, with agency and strength can be interpreted in many different ways.
Yeah, we chose well.
Represented. Yeah.
We chose well. You know, blow.
Based on how wonderfully I thought Color of Always was put together, I have zero doubts that this is going to be that this won't be another just amazing collection of stories, beautifully curated by all of you. So I'm very much looking forward to this. And as we've talked about the creative side of things a bit, let's get down to the fun stuff of it. Like, what kind of tiers are you offering everybody? Are you keeping it like kind of simple with like just kind of like the book and all that, or are you going to be offering more like pins and stickers like you did with your previous ones?
We're doing a little simpler than last time, because we kind of went a little wild last time, and it was great. Everybody's been really enjoying all their reward items, but it kind of caused a lot of work when in the back end there's so few of us involved in the process of getting everything together. So we're, you know, in when it comes down to it, it's just like me and Brent, you know, like we have our editorial team, but you know, very few of us working on things after the campaign is over. So we are moving forward with digital copy of the book, a pack of prints, some stickers, and an enamel pin. And then we're going to have some limited, like really nice prints of our cover art and two additional, what we're calling alternate cover prints. So they'll be dressed like it's a cover with the logo and everything on it. Brent, if you want to make some call outs, please feel free.
Yeah. And just to reiterate too, we were a few thousand dollars over our goal, and we broke even. I mean, we were well over our goal, and we broke even. So
yeah,
we are definitely being very careful monetarily as well in terms of calculating the budget and what we're going to be doing for add-ons. I believe we're going to have, I guess, we have prints, and I don't want to give away necessarily what the prints are yet, but there'll be really special print add-ons from Elisa Romboli, who did our cover for Color of Always. And who was our other print? I think it was Natasha. Yes, oh, Natasha. Okay. And so I think that I think the combination of those two as like as focals for, they're going to look a little bit like alternate covers in a way. So it'll be really interesting to see how those play out. I don't want to like give away too much of how they look, but we got one in already, and they're very stunning.
You know, hopefully we'll have some artwork to show by the time this airs. But really excited to have Natasha's print, because I mean, I love Heathen a lot. I'm like the Kool-Aid man.
That Natasha, by the way, everybody. That Natasha, sorry.
I'm like the Kool-Aid man. Somebody says something about Heathen, and then all of a sudden I'm like breaking through the wall. Like, did somebody mention Heathen? I'm like frothing at the mouth and like probably crying a little bit. So it's this is exciting for me, because that's, you know, one of the first comics that I read that wasn't, you know, superhero related. And it made me really excited about indie comics in general. So Heathen's like a gateway drug for me. So I'm really excited for this. Awesome. It means a lot to me.
Shout out to Brett again, because we're partnering with Brett. Oh, yeah.
Brett Schmidt, Demon Pack Brett, the greatest sticker mind of our generation. Awesome. The stickers are going to be really incredible for Slot Cow. I'm really excited. I'm sure by the time this drops, like, you'll see the cool stuff. We worked on one today. I'm really excited about it.
All right.
And the enamel pin will be pulled from the Swat Cow logo. It's the ampersand. That's like a mace, like a morning star.
It's going to be a
really cool pin. I'm really excited for that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Sharp Wit and the Company of Women launches on September 27th. There will be the pre-launch link, so you can follow the project and be notified for when it goes live in the show notes. If there's anything else you would like to add before we get to our questions, our random questions, now is the time.
No, let's go.
All right. All right. So now we are in the shuffle portion where we ask the five random questions. I had these generated and shuffled before we started recording. And let's start off. This is one I was hoping would come up, just because it was one of the questions I really happy that I thought of. It's not like a super deep amazing question. It's just like, oh yeah, that's I think that's a good one. And that is, what is your favorite setup to work?
Do you want to do like a pivot where I could start and then Michelle?
Sure, go.
My current setup, actually. I mean, I'm not afforded the opportunities I'd like, but my office is surrounded by all of my friends. That was by design. I got Sweeney Boo to the left of me and Joshua Hickson. And I got like, I stare over and I got Gavin Smith and Sue Lee and Brian Level and all, you know, and Gavin Goudry. And, you know, so it's like all the people that I've befriended and I've talked to, I got Liana behind me. I feel like I'm empowered, like a little bit of them is with me whenever I'm working on something. And it's quiet down here. I put on music and I'm surrounded by stories and art. I can't think of a better place to be.
Awesome. Awesome. Michelle?
This is a difficult question for me to answer, just because I've been sort of like quite transient lately. I haven't really remained in the same space for multiple months since end of last year. So I just moved and I kind of have like a temporary office space set up in my new place. But I mean, I don't know. I'm a writer. I do weird things. I write at weird times. A lot of the stuff that I've written, it's been at like 3 a.m. in the notes app for some reason, like a celebrity apology on my phone in the middle of the night. So like, I feel like I'm most comfortable when I'm just at peace. And whether that means I'm like laying on the floor or sitting on the couch with a cup of coffee, or I'm like up in the mountains by a lake, or sitting by the river, like I just need to feel like I'm not having like pressure from all angles, because I can't really process and think when I'm under pressure. So I think at this point in my life, my favorite setup is silence, peace, and trying to find a way to feel some kind of comfort. And I think in the future, I'm sure this will change as since I just moved and I'm getting like a permanent office space set up, like that I will be closer to Brent's setup with, you know, original art and like my books and like all of my Sailor Uranus statues and, you know, my things. And I think that mm-hmm. will bring me peace. But in this moment, it's just wherever I can find those little bits of peace, I think is my favorite setup.
That's a great answer.
I didn't have the luxury of getting to know Michelle very well until traveling, I think, started to a degree. But I've seen glimmers of the stuff that she has. And I have no doubt in my mind that I cannot wait to see what that settles into in terms of the art and stuff. But that's coming from me, and you know what I have down here. But I also can speak to the 4 a.m. note-taking and rambling. And some of the coolest stories and ideas I've ever seen came out of those 3 a.m. iPhone note things. And she's amazing.
So you haven't seen anything yet either.
I bet. Nice. I know. I am still looking forward to the grand opus.
Someday.
Awesome. All right. Our second question. Which comic book character do you think has the fanciest coffee order?
Oh, here we go. Go ahead, Brent.
Fanciest?
Do you want me? I can start this one, probably.
Yeah, no, it could also be viewed as most complicated or just, you know, the most involved one.
Go for it. No,
I mean, like comic book character, or can it be like an MCU character?
Either or.
It's because, fine. Like, you know, all I want to talk about for the rest of my life is Madison, spelled with two N's and a Y, but it's not where you think. I'm sure she's one of those girls that goes to Starbucks and has those, like, really long orders that has, like, the three pumps of this, two pumps of this, a shot of espresso, you know, like, no foam or extra foam or both somehow, and whipped cream. And I just feel like she's one of, like, those girls. So, like, all I want to talk about is Madison. My DMs are open, please.
Yeah, her coffee orders are definitely tossed up on Reddit posts and
right, absolutely. So I'm really happy that I had the opportunity to talk about her. Thank you for my life.
Celine from the X-Men, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, the vampire mutant.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that.
I mean, there's the blood angle, but then again, there's also what kind, and there's also, like, I don't know. I just see, like, she would want a little bit of everything in there. Or, yeah. Alternatively, maybe Boom Boom. I don't know.
That's a good one. Because my first thought was, like, maybe, like, Emma Frost. But, like, no, she would be very simple. Like, hers would
exactly.
be, like, it would be the highest of, like, quality things, but it would be very, very simple. Like, but yeah, I think Celine would definitely be it. Boom Boom, I think would just be, like, one of those, like, specialty drink is, like, all the rage. Like, that's her go-to.
how about Warren Worthington?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure his would be very fussy. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I'd agree there. Awesome. Okay, for our next question. If one of your original characters was left on a desert island, what music would they bring?
I think, let's just go with Carol, because I have to. And I'd say it would probably be an amalgam of various classic rock. With
Carol's
a little bit of
your original characters, Brett.
My original character. Sorry, I thought, well, they'd be like original favorites, something like that. I don't think, do we have, I guess,
or talk about Carol again.
No. Well, think of original character. I'm trying to think of some of the characters that I've invented that would have that layer of depth to it. Okay. I guess there's a character that I wrote for a relatively unpublished, sort of in limbo situation, but it's a nondescript kind of like Western heroine who went on kind of a murderous rampage to avenge a family figure, and set in the West, but there's a somber tone to it all, and it wraps up somewhat somberly too, and there is a certain type of Newfoundland folk music from Irish, Scotch-Irish immigrants that they brought over when they first came across the pond, and a few of them settled in the Sound outside of the Cape in that area. And I think that's some of the stuff that she'd listen to, and that's a lot of what I listened to as I was writing it, if that counts or not.
Yeah, that counts. Sounds great.
It's a weird one, but
yeah. No, it sounds great. I'm trying to think like which character to talk about. I feel like my original character, Dana from my story in Color of Always, All That Glitters, I would say that she probably listens to a lot of early to mid 2000s club music and pop music, simply because that's what you, when you're a young gay, you just listen to whatever's sort of on the radio when you're playing by the DJ. So like a lot of all the like the DJs are like escaping my mind right now that did like the mashup type music, like God, why can't I think of the name of these people? Let's even go like one step further, like listening to like old, like that one Timbaland album that had like a couple Justin Timberlake songs on it. And I imagine that she would also listen to like emo, like probably like My Chemical Romance and like Newfound Glory and old Paramore, that sort of thing. Have like a little bit of mild rage mixed in with like Sandstorm. Just Sandstorm over and over, really. Just want to talk about that song for a minute. What a great song. It's going to be my hype song for tomorrow. I'm going to listen to it all day.
All right. So for our redoing our third random question, thanks to many technical issues, let's go with, what piece of media have you purchased numerous times?
Oh my God. All right, I'll start. Skyrim.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Because they keep re-releasing it and I just keep buying it again for a different platform.
What do you play as?
I usually just play as like a Nord. I'm super boring. I always just make like a hot lady that look, I, you know, want to murder me. I'm sure that shocks everyone. And I always think I'm going to do like a different track, but I always end up, in the, like the Brotherhood. I always end up being an assassin. I'm sure this is also very shocking to everyone. And I know I'm terrible. And, you know, I try to think like, I'm going to do something different this time. And then I always marry the Huntress from like the Werewolf Lodge because she reminds me of Xena. Like she's like the choice. And then I always buy the house in Solitude. Like I always think I'm going to do something different. And then like I might for like a week, but then I like fall back into old habits. So
we're going to have to unpack that whole always choosing the Brotherhood thing at some point.
I don't understand what there is to unpack. Michelle choosing the life of the assassin doesn't really seem that shocking. So I don't really think there's anything to unpack there. I think it's pretty on point. Yeah.
Brent?
That's a hard one to top, actually. Let's just broaden this out across the whole like last 20 years then. And I would say role-playing games on computer or console that had a rich like back lore, world spanning back lore, but must absolutely have a romance component with preferably a sapphic option to it.
Okay. It was an interesting question because I tried to think of for myself, like what's something I've like just like bought repeatedly and you know, whatever, like Michelle brought up the Skyrim being released in different formats, like, you know, I just have it on PS3 and I'm quote unquote not done.
You ever really done with Skyrim?
I think once you face the Ebony Knight, I think that's consider it kind of done.
Maybe.
I guess like you've done all the big things then, cuz I've done the, you know, my little Khajiit tank has just like done all the, he's beaten all the dragons and all that. It's just gotten really boring. So then I've tried to do a restart of like, you know, I want to do a magic based character. I'm going to have someone who does that. And I played it for like maybe a couple hours trying to build up this magic person, like, and I just went right back into just like getting the nice swords and stuff.
Right, you go back to what you did before. I understand. I do the same thing.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. But,
like the dragon, I guess Dragon Age Mass Effect. I'm part of that crowd, even though I don't really talk about it much.
And the League of Lesbians. I mean, League of Legends. I'm sorry.
That, yeah, well, I had a whole tenure there too. Yeah.
All right. So for our fourth question, how many chicken wings do you think you could eat in a single sitting?
I don't know, 25 to 30, I want to say.
Well, are they hot?
Yeah, are they spicy? They have to be, yeah.
Yeah, they would have to be at some level of spice. It doesn't have to be, you know, the hot ones, the bomb level heat.
I say 25 to 30, but I probably could eat like 6. But like, I want to be like ambitious and be like 25 to 30, man. Yeah, totally like a competitive, competitive eater, 25 to 30, probably realistically 6.
I got questions like, do we care about what happens to us afterward?
I feel like if you're going to see how many chicken wings you can eat in a single sitting, that's not really a thought you're going to have. That's also not really a concern at the moment.
I would say just to eat the flats. I don't really like the legs. I'm like a flats only kind of lady.
I'm with you there.
Dark meat always forever.
So, usually. But I would say you're not going to have a great time.
If I am not concerned about shitting myself, okay. I would probably say about a dozen and a half, ish. Okay. Now, if I want to be a little careful about it, I'd say about a dozen even or a little under it.
Okay. That's
it out there, literally and figuratively.
It sounds like you two need to have a contest.
I don't really think so. It's not really fair to Brent. No. It's not really fair to Brent for like to go up against me in like anything because
wow,
I'll probably win and like that's not nice. I try to be like kind of nice,
Oh yeah, you're so nice.
she's very considerate,
A terrible person. I don't know why I have any friends.
All right, so for our final random question, it's probably the most important question that you'll be ever asked, and I don't want you to get too upset thinking about it, but I think it's very important that people need to know this. If you had a signature sandwich, what would it be?
Oh, God. Oh.
All right, so I used to get this sandwich from a place when I lived in Pittsburgh. And it was toasted rye bread with grilled zucchini, fresh mozzarella, balsamic glaze, and fresh thick sliced bacon. And it was, the bread was toasted. I don't know if I said that. That's an important element. It was so delicious that I could have literally had that sandwich every single day. And it was actually like a vegetarian sandwich that didn't have bacon on it, but I would add bacon and they would write naughty vegetarian on the box. And I always really appreciated that. So I think about that sandwich a lot. Miss you, sandwich.
I could see you like kissing your lips and like raising it to the sky.
Yeah, I'm just like thinking about that. I love sandwiches. So this is a great question. Brent, please. Yeah, you're up.
I love sandwiches. I absolutely adore sandwiches. I have so many that I appreciate. Okay. So would a breakfast sandwich that's comprised of two waffles count?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a restaurant in Columbus that it's kind of like Southern cuisine, but it's like soul food breakfast called Super Chefs. And they make something called the Juggernaut. Now they are not licensed to do this, but they borrow a lot of their naming nomenclature from comics.
Mm-hmm.
And one of their things is called the Juggernaut, and it's two waffle sandwiches with fried chicken, candied bacon, egg, American cheese, pepper jack cheese, with a honey drizzle and a maple syrup glaze. served with hash. And it's literally heaven in your hands. And they also use red food coloring, so the waffles are red.
Nice.
So it's the
nice.
Juggernaut. So yeah, exactly. So it is. Oh my good God. If I know that we have a shared love of breakfast and over the top breakfast food, you would love Super Chefs, and the Juggernaut is phenomenal. And that would be my iconic quote unquote sandwich.
God, I love sandwiches.
Yes.
They are the best, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Since we've had so many technical issues recording this episode, and you two have been such great sports about it, and we're on the topic of sandwiches, let's have a bonus question. Bonus random question. Not so random, because I'm looking at it and I want to ask this question. And this is... I don't want to put too much weight on this question, but your answers will determine if we can remain friends or not. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
You're jumping right into the discourse, aren't you?
Hot takes abound. It's everywhere.
Oh, jeez. Well, Brent, you go first. I can't.
Okay.
Don't say I'm agnostic, because I will literally leave. I will leave.
I think if the juggernaut can be considered a sandwich, I have to offer an olive branch and say that it is a sandwich. And I know for a fact that Merriam-Webster backs us up on this. Because the definition of a sandwich is two or more slices of bread or a split roll with filling in between. And by that standard, a hot dog is technically a sandwich.
Can't say I'm too happy with that response, Brent.
I feel like a hot dog is a hot dog, okay?
I understand the global definition of a sandwich and how a hot dog would fit into that. But if you're like, hey, Don, come over and we'll have some sandwiches. Okay, cool. And you give me a hot dog, I'll be like...
I would say, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, like, I'd like, probably take the hot
right,
dog
cool.
out of the
like I love hot dogs, but like, yeah, this is not a... You said sandwiches. Like, so,
would
yeah.
I call it a sandwich? No, I wouldn't call it a sandwich. You know, me personally.
It's sort of like if somebody offered me a piece of fruit and handed me a tomato, it would probably be a similar reaction
Thank you.
To somebody asking
Thank you.
If I wanted a sandwich and offering me a hot dog.
That is the perfect analogy. Thank you. That is exactly what my brain is like. My response would be to like, what the fuck is this?
I was trying to be an envy of peace, but if you had to put a Please. Gun to my head, it was just, I have to say no, but I was trying to bridge the gap there, but I don't think there's no allies to a hot dog as a sandwich in this room.
Yeah.
No, there's not.
And, you know, being from Chicago, I am not a hard ass about no ketchup on hot dogs.
You mean the soup they call pizza?
Well, you're getting it from the wrong place. And also the deep dish, that's not Chicago pizza. Chicago pizza is really like the tavern style pizza cut into squares. That's Chicago style pizza. Because you tell
it was Detroit style.
You ask any Chicagoan what their favorite pizza place is, it's not going to be a deep dish place. If they are, they're lying to you. It's going to be some place, probably with some random dude's name or whatever, like that's only in their neighborhood or whatever. And it's going to be, you know, a slightly thicker, crackery type crust, and it's going to be cut into squares, and it's going to have, you know, the best Italian sausage in the world on it, and that's it. But no.
Okay, Don, you're gonna have to. I need to experience this pizza now. I've never had anything like it before. What you're describing is alien to me in the context of Chicago. I'm a tourist whenever I go, so I mean, I freely admit this, but I've never been given proper pizza in my travels through that city.
Well, here's the thing. Like, in terms of like deep dish pizza, like. There's the go-tos like Pequod's or like Lou Malnati's or like the... There's also like Giordano's and all that, but for me personally, it's Lou Malnati's or Pequod's for deep dish. That's the high standard for that style of pizza. But both of those places offer a thinner crust, regular style pizza that is just phenomenal as well. So I don't think you could go wrong there if you're ever in Chicago. doing that.
I'm writing this down right now. I'm writing this down in real time.
So, and naturally, the place that I grew up was called, this place called Golden Krust, which is, you know, oftentimes now when we make the trek into Chicago, my wife and I are often like, should we swing by and just bring a pizza home? Like, just because that was our, you know, even though my wife and I grew up in, you know, a few miles away from each other, that was both our family's pizza place.
That's so fun.
So that was, so yeah, it's, that's what that is. But back to the hot dog, like, I will say that a Chicago-style hot dog is the best way to have a hot dog, but I won't kick you out of my house if you have ketchup on your hot dog. It's fine.
Okay, no. We need to broach this right now. What's our opinions on ketchup? No, ketchup. I need to know. What's our opinions on ketchup, generally?
Generally? Why? I like ketchup. I think it's good.
Okay. Good. I was making sure. Yeah. We tossed it out there. I had to know, because some people are violent about their condiments.
Well, we're getting way past the context now, but like, since we're also talking about breakfast foods, ketchup and scrambled eggs.
No, absolutely not.
No, absolutely not.
Miss me with that, please. Miss me. Oh. Hot sauce, maybe. If anything, hot sauce.
I won't disagree that the hot sauce is better, but I have been known to do the ketchup with the scrambled eggs.
Now, I mean, like, who am I to tell you what tastes good to you? So, like, if that makes you happy, then, like, I want that for you.
I think it only works with certain types of ketchups, to be honest, because, the tangier, almost, like, spicier the ketchup is in terms of, I guess, tangier, not necessarily spicy.
Okay, which then leads... Give me a brand ketchup.
I think Hunt's is probably the best one for putting in scrambled eggs. And... but given the option, no, Cholula on eggs. That's where you go. Or Tapatio. You could put that.
Oh my god, Tapatio. Oh my god.
Yes, please.
There was, understand. I love Tapi. So good. I want to put it on all my food. I love hot sauce.
Also, Cholula had, they released a lime.
Yeah, that lime, one. Chili lime one. Oh, so man. Good.
Well, like one of my favorite like lunches, I can't do it because it's not great for you, but I just like to get like, you know, some refried beans, some tortillas, and then slap on some some of that on there and just make myself little bean tacos for lunch. Yeah. And it's just like,
I like the chipotle flavor also.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got that upstairs right now. It's dope. It's
delicious.
Nice. I think this conversation was a mistake because, you know, probably. it's getting late and I am just starving now. And
yeah, better go.
And I shouldn't do anything about it because I'm old now and it would just mean pain for me later to eat this, something substantial this late. Bro, Brent, Michelle, thank you so much for hanging in there and giving me so many amazing answers to these questions. I cannot wait to see how well Swat Cow does, and I'm sure it's just going to blow away all expectations and just be another phenomenal book in your bibliographies. So
thank you.
We love you.
Likewise. Thank you again for coming on, and let everyone know where they can find you on the social medias.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Cereal Pancake, the breakfast foods. And I like pancakes on Instagram.
I like how overt our desires are and how we express our online identities. Because I am Carol Collector on both Twitter and Instagram, and you can find us at extrapagespress.com, and I'm at brentfisher.net, and I believe you have a website now too, though, Michelle.
I do. I snuck it in there. It's just cerealpancake.com.
Oh, okay. Make sure I got that awesome. Right for you.
Yeah, and at extrapagespress on Twitter also.
Oh, true. Indeed.
I will make sure there are links to that in the show notes.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Don. You're the best.
You too are. Have a good one.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. Please be sure to return next episode with my guest, comic book creator, artist, and musician, Tony McMillan. See you then.